You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Hour number two, Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Tim McCullough has not made a pick. Boo!
Timmy sucks.
It's not nice.
Sorry. Not nice. Well, not in real life.
Okay.
I met Tim a couple times. He's a cool cat.
Tony, you said there's these two players on the board. You'd have a choice to make between Trey Turner and Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, so basically what I did is I ranked my guys 1 through 10 when I started this thing, and three of my guys are still here. So Trey Turner's the next up in my queue. Josh Donaldson's after that, and then Charlie Blackman. So I'm going to get Turner or Josh Donaldson in that order.
And you know what's interesting is that you see Arenado go number 3, and then you see Brian go at number 6 to Bobby McMahon. It's interesting how, you know, in so many drafts, how these guys, like, one time it'll be Arenado ahead of Bryant, then it'll be Bryant ahead of Arenado. You see Bryant go number 1, and it's unique how people are viewing these guys. They're so close together, you can split so many hairs, and they're going, like, ahead of each other in different drafts.
I think Trout and Betts are the consensus, though.
Yeah, I agree.
I've seen Betts go number 1, but I think it's pretty much overall a consensus.
And then after that, it's just like watch mumble percentage. Jump. And then off
then
that,
it's anything you want
to
do.
Then it's how you
want to.
Then it's
roster construction. See what Brian and Arenado go in comparison to each other, though.
The only pick that surprised me was the Paul Goldschmidt pick ahead of Chris Bryant. That was the only one that surprised me.
How come?
I look at it with Goldschmidt. We've seen that the home run numbers decline the last couple seasons. He does have the stolen bases at the first base position. I look at Chris Bryant. He's got dual position eligibility. They both steal bases. They both hit home runs. Chris Bryant, a little younger player, a better offense overall. I just wouldn't pick Paul Goldschmidt ahead of Chris Bryant.
Okay. Reasonable. Totally reasonable. I know. I think for some people it's a debate. Scotty, you want Tony Sutton this one here?
Yeah, I'd rather have Bryant. You know, if, like, I was just doing... I probably would have had Brian at least at number 4.
Do you think it's a drop off at first? Maybe that's what the deal is. The drop off at first base.
I think people just look at it. You know, they look at Goldschmidt. He's got that speed for first base. It was upped last year, and the power is always going to be there. He's kind of unique for a first baseman in that respect. Because the next guy off the board is Rizzo, and you know we didn't see the speed last year. So maybe that's what Jake's thinking. It could be.
I think it might be a drop-off.
The people seem to be really, really going out of their way on speed. Greg Ambrosius wrote something about this yesterday. This year, you know, last year everyone picked pitching early. This year it seems to be speed is at the forefront, people trying to get. So maybe Jake was getting the stolen bases there.
Speaking of Jake Seeley, he wrote a whole lot in the Roto Experts exclusive Edge package, which is available now, rotoexperts.com. Free radio when you check out, you get a little discount. So that's pretty cool. Now, Jake wrote a lot, of course, for the package, including an article on bounce back hitters. And you talk, I got signed out. You talk about speed, Tony, just one moment ago. The first bounce back hitter that Jake writes about, actually, is D. Gordon, oddly enough. I mean, there may not be two players we talked about more than D. Gordon and Billy Hamilton here. And D. Gordon literally the first name on this list. And are you surprised, Corey, he makes the bounce back list for Jake?
I've seen Jake's labor draft.
Right.
He took D. Gordon.
Right.
I've heard Jake talking on Target about some of his strategies. So seeing that Jake is in on D. Gordon this year doesn't come as a surprise to me.
Okay. D. Gordon, number 1 bounce back candidate on this list. Middle infielders, excuse me. Number 2 is Devin Travis, Scotty. Haven't talked nearly as much about Devin Travis. Jakey writes, and I won't reveal the whole thing, of course. People got to pay for that. Travis is yet to play for a full season, but he showed plenty of opportunity. 2015, 304, as everybody knows. 8 homers, a couple stolen bases. And then last year, comes back from the injury and winds up hitting 300. He then extrapolated the line. Like D. Gordon, Devin Travis just needs to stay on the field. Scott, are you in on Devin Travis?
He's had a lot of trouble staying healthy. Like you said, you know, I think it's pretty much it is what it is. You know, if he can stay on the field, he can give you about a 280, 290 average and hit about 15 home runs, chip in a few stolen bases here. Bounce back? I don't know because, like, when he was in there, like, he hit 300 with 11 home runs in 101 games, so he was playing while he was in there. I think it's just a matter of staying healthy. At the total bounce back, I don't think he had a bad year when he was in there.
He's got to get up to speed in spring training. So you want to see him get up to speed. You want to see the knee feeling better from the off-season procedure he had. He had a bone bruise also, so his lateral movement needs to start increasing. He is a second baseman, so that's going to be very important for him. So Devin Travis, bounce back is very key to injury, and I think he's a 300 hitter.
I think he's a 300 hitter, too. I think the OBP is good as well. He struck out 20% of the time last year, about the average in the majors. If he can play a full season, Tone, does he finish as a top 12 second baseman?
No, just outside of it. He's going to be really close, but he's going to finish just outside of it. He plays a full season.
All right. So if he finishes just outside of it, is that really count as a bounce back, I guess? I don't know.
That's what I was saying. You know, it's like he played well while he was in there last year.
He didn't play.
To me, he doesn't count as a bounce back.
Okay.
Jake taking the easy way out.
Let's continue. Bounce back corner infielders. One of the guys we mentioned yesterday, and that was Lucas Duda. And so much of the pain with Lucas Duda is, oh, we're so bored of Lucas Duda. He strikes out. The average isn't good. And all of a sudden you look up and Lucas Duda has a crap load of home runs. Lucas Duda is not sexy. He's not even fun anymore. But 2 years ago, Duda hit 27 home runs. 3 years ago, he hit 30. So last year he missed almost the entire year, finished with just 7 home runs, and the batting average is in the tank at 230. Again, just 47 games played. Scotty, you're the Met fan, obviously, at the table. What do you expect from Lucas Duda?
I think, you know, there's a guy that stays healthy. I really like him in on-base percentage leagues, and the natural power is there for 30 home runs. The only thing is like, you know, he's awful against lefties. You know, that'll take him out. It could take him out of the lineup in some spots, and they can stick Wilmer Flores in there against the lefties, against which he's much better. But still, even in the limited playing time, the natural power is there. There's going to be very good RBI production. Look, like, what is Duda going around the 19th, 20th round? I'll take it all day.
He's got a bad back. And back injuries can cripple careers, you know what I'm saying? So this is a dude, he's over 30 years old now, already seeing him play with a back issue. He's going to be part of a platoon. So he bounces back because he plays more games. But with a bad back, it's hard to really suggest that somebody's going to get, you know, 140-something games.
Tony, what about you and Lucas Duda here?
It comes to risk-reward, though. When you're getting this guy in the 19th or 20th round, who else has the ability to hit 27 home runs? I like him a lot, actually, if I'm going to get him that late.
Yep.
Continue to get that late. He's an afterthought, and he has the most upside at that point. So I think, based on health, he definitely gets a bounce back. But a lot of these guys that he's written up about, like, I don't really get the purpose of this article on some of these players, because a lot of these guys were injured, and of course they come back and they play. Now, a guy like Carlos Gomez is a different guy because he wasn't. But Kian Broxton, I mean, bounce back from what? The guy was a minor league ball player.
What? Why are you laughing?
He just told Jake this part.
That's not nice. I'm skipping right over that.
The friendship gets stronger.
Like, Domingo Santana's a good one because he had high expectations last year. And I think a lot of people have written him off. I mean, he's going late in drafts. I think he's going to end up being a great steal for people late in the draft. There's some hit or misses here.
I was going to take him one by one. We're going to slowly move along. And Tony just, this guy doesn't even count.
Yeah, well, you know.
But to Tony's point.
Yeah.
Can you really classify a guy that's played 47 games as a dude because he was sidelined with a back injury? Can you classify him as a bounce back?
So you believe a bounce back should not involve injury?
No, Bryce Harper is a bounce back.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I didn't watch
Miguel Sano is in this article. Does that count? Yeah. I think that counts.
Yeah. But how many? I'm about to say, how old is he? How many games? I mean, how many? He's a rookie, right?
No. This will be his third year.
Okay, so yeah, I bet. I can see that being a bounce back situation. Well, Matt Harvey is missing a rib, but you know what I mean. You know, guys like that underperform.
Yeah, like Jacob deGrom, I might categorize as a bounce back.
To a degree, at least.
Yeah. To a degree. Yeah. And I think Carlos Gomez also in here is fair as a bounce back.
Yeah, Carlos Gomez is a good one. That's a good one.
I think that's fair.
Those are the guys that's the ones, and Domingo Santana, to me, about guys that had bad years and you can go and you can statistically find a reason for them to turn it around.
Yep.
As opposed to, oh, you know what? He just has to stay healthy.
Carlos Gomez is an interesting name because we're used to Carlos or thinking with the mindset that Carlos Gomez is a five toolsy player, right? Like that's what, when you think of Carlos Gomez, that's kind of what you think of. And Gomez now, he's 31 years old. Last season, obviously played for both the Astros and the Rangers. He got cut by the Astros because he was absolutely terrible. Finishes the year with 18 stolen bases, 13 home runs, the average at 231. So if we're agreeing with Jake and he's a bounce back candidate, the average goes back up, and all those other numbers creep up. Carlos Gomez is going to be one of these steals on draft day, Tony, right?
Yeah, I actually like him where he's going right now, and I think he can be and provide you double-digit home runs, double-digit stolen bases. The only part that is that what the hell happened? When you say he was bad, that was an understatement.
Yeah.
I wonder, he was
and
terrible.
Did you look at late last year? And
he was good.
September was tremendous. He had 326, yep. 6 home runs, 16 RBIs, and 4 steals in September.
Maybe he didn't get along with his teammates in Houston.
Maybe.
Sometimes, a change of scenery is what a guy needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when I write my insider report, I got two different opinions on Puig because we were talking about him yesterday, Corey. One guy says that, like, if he stays in L.A., he's dead, but, like, trade him to somewhere like Camden Yards.
Dead?
Well, you know, as a player.
Oh,
what's, you know,
but what's going on? Bloods and Crips going out to Yasiel Puig?
But, you know, trade him to, you know, like a place like Camden Yards, or just trade him to another team, and a change of scenery guy, this guy could revive his career.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Can I cut in for something here? Because now I'm getting aggravated.
Please do.
Draft etiquette number, we talked about mock draft etiquette or fantasy draft etiquette. If you have the 11th pick, don't leave the computer.
Agreed.
The guy's going to pick twice and really in a row. You got to stay by your computer at that point.
And you know the other person ahead of you is on the radio. We're talking about it, and he's probably going
to
make a pick.
Yo, the thing about it is, like, did you wake up, make a pick, and then go back to sleep? You know, you on the turn.
Yeah,
you're on the turn. Set the cue if you're tired. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is one of the biggest things that I hate in slow drafts.
It's a joke.
Somebody kills the clock on the turn, get back up, and kill the clock again.
So it's like, to me, I sit here in this draft, right? Like, the four of us are all here, right? Four of us are here. Florio's downstairs. That's 5. Jake works here all day. He, you know, he's on his computer all day.
Yeah, Jake's up listening.
Right.
Thinking of a comeback for Tony.
That's 6. Frank's here all day. That's 7. Benny's here all day. That's 8. 8 of the 12 guys in this room. George Christ is on the radio. He's on his computer all day. He's working. That's 9. Waterloo, Timmy, Bobby McMahon, you got to be on this right now.
Yeah, this is important stuff right here.
I'm throwing devil's advocate out there.
Defending
the Roto expert.
Yeah, no, that's what he does. No, that's for that.
No, I don't care who it is. 2 words. I'll let you guys react to this. I'll be ready.
He's setting it up.
Slow draft.
Oh, come on.
No,
come on.
See, Scott, this is where I disagree because
right.
You get 5 hours, and basically that's in case something comes up or anything like that. You're basically, when you do something like this, you're an a-hole and think your time's more important than me. And you wait around, and whenever I'm ready, I'll pick. That's not how it's done. You got to be ready. You got to know if you have the 11th pick or the second pick in a draft when it goes the other way, that, you know what, if Greg picks, I'm there. I agree with Corey all the time. I have the 10th pick. I've been on cue since last night. I have 3 pick guys in my order. And I know who the guys I'm going to pick, so I just put it on an automatic.
Seems very simple to me. you know.
See, me, I'm be popping in and out because I want to, you know what I'm saying? I got to get the app rolling. I got to, you know, stuff like that.
You're using the app for this.
I'm going to load the app up a little bit later on in the day, probably in the break that I have, you know, in between the things that we got to do here. I load the app up, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'll be, you know.
Up.
Yeah, yeah, because you know you got to set it up. Again. Yeah, you got to set
how
it up.
How long does this process take?
No, so you go in there, right? So you go in there. It's not that long, Tony. So you go in there, and then you hit the app, right, whatever, and then you say, you know, you select new draft, and you put the settings in, which is this is standard format right here.
Yeah.
And I just start adding players. So there you go right there. But Tim needs a damn app.
I'm really worried about this dude, Michael Waterloo, that used to be Scott Angle. Like, certain people say things to me that I'm like, oh, God, now what are we doing here? Why are we? You're supposed to be a Roto expert. Why are you asking this question? He was going to put this draft together with one catcher. Myself and Tim had to say, no, you can't do that because every other draft has two catchers. Does this guy have any experience here, Scott Angle? Why would he suggest such a ludicrous thing?
He does have experience. I think he's just throwing it out there.
I think that the thing is
we're doing a bunch of mock drafts and want to replicate different types of leagues, and there are one catcher leagues.
I think that for what we're doing, and we're bringing advice at analysis to the masses, we're kind of industry standard. You feel what I'm saying? So always veer towards the industry standard.
Yeah,
two catcher. Yeah,
But
it's,
here's this probably here's the should thing, be, Corey,
it's 15, though. It's 15 teams.
This,
team
is, this is the second of several mock drafts we're doing.
So you
that's
got,
why but, he asked that, because you know, we want to change it up for like different types
of
mocks.
Okay, I get what you're saying, but I think we're too early in the process. It's not even March yet. So when people unload the package, you know what I'm saying, they're going ahead to, they want to see the industry standard. Then they may get into a points league. Then they may say, okay, well, what about a category strategy or head-to-head? You know what I'm saying? So I think this early in the stage, we got to go by the industry standards. So, you know.
Well, we already had one draft. It was a two-catcher draft. So I think he was throwing it out saying, you know, is it time we do the one catcher or not? And then, you know, they said no, and fine, we move on.
Do you think that what we do is, as on-air analysts bringing information to the masses, that we should be playing in competitive leagues? Or do you think a home league is good enough?
Hold the thought.
Let's go to break.
I think there's a lot here. When we come back, we answer Corey's question. Do you think a home league is good enough, or do you need a competitive league to properly give your expert advice? Expert leagues versus home leagues. We'll break it down next here on the Roto Experts. We are returning here, Roto Experts in the morning, and Corey brought up a question before the break, so we throw it back to you, my man.
So basically, when we're on air, giving out information, giving out analysis on a fantasy sport, is it okay for us to play in home leagues, or do we need to be playing in more competitive leagues? I'm not saying that you hop in, you know, $1,100 league.
Right.
But should we be playing in leagues like the Greenwich Street Tavern League?
Sure.
With good players that know what they're doing, industry format. You know what I'm saying? Should we be playing in, you know, PPRs with 20 rounds of drafting? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Should we be playing in these type of leagues? Or is it okay for us that's giving information to play in your home league with one catcher?
Tony?
Yeah, I think it, more than ever, it's important that you play in these types of leagues. I think for several different reasons. First of all, you got to know the experience of the top players. Like, if we're sitting here reporting on fantasy sports, I think everybody in the business that we do is good at giving player information. So everybody can talk about the players, who this and that. But I don't think in this business we have a lot of people that are very good at winning at any of these. And I think there's a lot of frauds on the radio that write columns that are good at giving play advice, but that don't know how to win at playing fantasy sports. And I've said that for a long time. And I think more than ever with social media, with the Facebook and Twitter, people know and they keep track of who wins in leagues. And now to have credibility in the sport, I think you need to play in these leagues and you need to be successful. I mean, at one time, people could go to RotoGrinders and look at every tournament I was in, whether I won or not. People go to Sirius XM Host League. People go to Tout Wars. They know who wins those for, you know, for a week, and then they forget. But they you have to be able to play in these types of leagues. I even go as far to play AL and NL only one league each just so I can talk about it. I feel like you have to do it.
And it's like, I remember it's like week six, week seven of the NFL season, and dudes is writing waiver wire columns talking about go pick up Jamison Crowder.
Right.
You shouldn't. Come on now. You play in a league where Jamison Crowder's on the waiver wire in week six?
Right.
I'm going to start throwing it out there for as an example. If that's the case, you're not playing with the best competition. So maybe you don't need to be giving out information and advice and analysis.
Well, that's how I point to football. That's how football is. Football is so big right now that, you know, everybody who plays it and, you know, and has a place to get published, you know, stuff like that, you know, they believe they're an expert or whatever, or for whatever reason. You know, you see a lot more mainstream advice now because the hobby's bigger than ever.
So I think that, so let's be honest here, right? Let's be entirely forthcoming here. Baseball-wise, you want to talk about expert leagues. Nato and I are splitting into the Greenwich Street Tavern League. And a lot of people have partners in this league. It's not like a rare thing, right? Nato and I are splitting this GST league. Have I done a big money expert league with all you guys? No.
Do you play in the one? Did your league have one catcher?
So I play in a couple leagues with friends, right?
Okay.
One of those leagues is one catcher. One of those leagues, my home league, is the antithesis of expert leagues, right? We have the weird categories like the hitter strikeouts I talk about, with OBP rather than average, with three outfielders rather than five, with no middle infield, with no corner infield, with one catcher.
But that
is what everyone will say is as basic as it comes.
But see, the thing about it is when you talk about giving analysis, right? That's a keeper league, right?
That is keeper league.
See what I'm saying? That's not a redraft.
Correct.
So I think Florio. Like
that's one league. I played another league that has a low standard. Like that's two catchers. Has
so
standard,
I think
right?
you should be in a two catcher, 5x5 rotisserie league with competitive
players.
So here's
what I think. I think you owe it to yourself as an expert,
yes,
to play in at least one. Again, Corey's right. It doesn't have to be for $1,000.
Like,
you're not making anyone put up money they don't have.
No, you don't have to do that. No.
But you owe it to yourself as an expert, as a host, as somebody that writes about fantasy, to play just a standard league. 5x5. Literally, 5x5. Yep. Nothing quirky. 5x5, two catchers, corner infield, middle infield, five outfielders, 30 rounds, whatever it is. You owe it, because otherwise your analysis is all biased.
I learned this very early when I was, you know, started doing these radio shows and stuff like that. People are going to take you to task for playing in your home league. They want to see what you got outside of your home league. Your home league could have collusion. Your home league could have guys that, you know, don't really know what they're doing.
Sure.
So you need to be playing in some leagues that are competitive leagues. Maybe you got to put 25, 50 bucks down. Maybe it's something like the GST league. You need to be playing in competitive leagues if, in my opinion, you plan on being in the air giving analysis. Because if you're not playing in competitive leagues and you're telling me in week six to go pick up Jamison Crowder, I'm never reading your stuff again.
Tony's right that anybody seemingly can make a good point on a player. Like, we can all sit here on Fangraphs and be like, wow, this guy's hard hit percentage was so high last year. The BABIP was so low. This guy's going to be a huge bounce back candidate this year. We all can do that. We all have the ability to read through the advanced statistics now, which is great, and we all can give good analysis. But if we can't apply it properly, like if I sit here and be like, if I go back to this mock draft, right, I could have taken Mookie Betts because in my keeper league, my home league,
exactly,
is the one that's most important to me.
That would have been for you.
That would have been for me, and that would have been selfish, and that would not have been good expert, quote-unquote, analysis. I took Mike Trout because That is what I would really do. And in this 5x5 Rose History draft, I would take Mike Trout.
That's what you
that's
would recommend somebody to do. Yeah.
Correct. And that's why I did it. Scott, do you agree that you need to play in at least one quote-unquote expert league with standard, no BS, no quirks,
yeah,
just straight up standard fantasy baseball in order to properly give analysis?
Most or all of the leagues that I play in every sport are like at that level. And if I'm seeing something that's not, I'm not interested in joining usually.
Tony, is it okay though? So you play in, as you said, NL only league, a mixed league expert. I'm sure you have a home league draft as well. And we all have our home league drafts.
Right? I don't think Tony has a home league.
You don't have a home league at all, Tony?
No, I stopped playing it. See, what happens is when you become like what we do, and Scott, you've been around, everybody wants to beat you. And
right.
If you get in too many, this is the one thing I learned. When I first got in the industry, I would play in every league I could just to get my name out there. And then they start hearing on shows about this guy sucks. Well, I'm in 32 leagues. I don't give a shit about that league. you know what? So I stopped, and now I just play three or four leagues, and I make sure I win a couple every year.
It's the same thing. I'm not I love everybody dearly. I'm not really hopping in your league. You know what I'm saying? Because if I hop in your league, and you're going to be talking trash about me, and I'm like, and I got, you know what I'm saying? I got my next door neighbor setting the lineup. You feel what I'm saying? So you have to be careful and selective in the leagues you're playing when you're disseminating and giving advice. You know what I'm saying? So that's a word of advice I would give to Frank Stanfill and Mike Florio.
Every year when NASCAR starts up, you know, I go to Yahoo and I look for a league to participate in, and it's always like, you know, like I joined this one called Past Champions Only. It's like if I play in a public league, I'm going to look for something that's super competitive.
Is it okay then? You're playing these expert leagues. You're doing, you know, you're doing it because it's your job to do it, right? Like, I'm partially, realistically, doing the GST league because it's my job. I need to be in a league with all of you guys so we can sit here and we can talk on an even playing field, right? Like, we're all in the same league. We're all doing it. And that's why I'm in this league, right?
Mm-hmm.
To give credence, to give respect, all that stuff. But if we take away the job portion of this, you know, we all have lives outside of here. We're not Scotty, the rest of us. Just kidding.
I guess if I watch baking, that's a lie.
It is a lie.
I'm sorry, I can't afford to go to, you know, Guam and, you know, stuff like that.
Scott, let him finish.
It was a joke. He's going to take a shot. He's going to get it back.
And first of all, how is watching a baking show expensive, by the way?
What? That's
a standard cable.
I don't understand how Greg took a shot. How did you take a shot there? I must have missed that.
Whatever. Anyway, we all have lives away from our jobs. And we all do these expert leagues could be considered part of the job. We joked about before, like Scott saying, or Tony mentioning, I should be watching spring training instead of college basketball for my job. We all have stuff away from that. Obviously, I want to go watch college basketball. I can go do that. But what do you say then, Tony, to the people that are in this industry that will tell you, I'm in the industry leagues, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, but you know what? My home league with my 12 buddies that I've been doing for 15 years is the most important league to me.
I don't have any problem with that. As long as they do it, they got to do it both, though. And I'll be honest. This is 110% honest. If I get in a baseball league that's a home league with guys that are not in the industry,
right,
it's the hottest thing in the world for me. It's because I get in one of these auctions and these dudes will bid $70. If
right.
I get in an auction league with experts, no one's going to bid more than $48 on a player. I know that going in.
Right.
And I know exactly what these guys are going to do. I get in a league with a bunch of guys that are not in the industry. I have no idea, and it throws me off. It's tougher.
Yeah, if it's not a snake draft either. It's like, I remember a few years ago, like Brian Ambos invited me into his league, and I had to get a feel for the draft as I was going along. But I knew one thing for sure. It's like everybody sat down. I saw 8 Yankee shirts. So the first thing I did was watch CZ Sabathia and watch to get bit up.
So I think it's a little bit different when you get invited into someone's home league or you have your league. Like, Scott, you know, we've talked about this. You have been going on for 15, 20 at this point. And I do too.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, to me, these are the kids like I talk to every day of my life, not at work. Like, take work out of it, I'm going to go talk shit to my friends via text message about our fantasy baseball league. So that takes to heart. Like, I'm going to come in here, and I want to be damn competitive in the GST league because I talk to you guys every single day, every single Monday through Friday morning. I want to be damn competitive in that league so I can talk crap to all of you guys and back and forth, right? We make trades and all that kind of stuff.
And you know what's going on.
And I know what's going on.
I have some leagues that are going to go by the board. So, like, you know, it's like my one home league, my football league.
Right.
It's all my friends.
Right.
Half of them at expert level, half of them are not.
Right.
It's an average league, but because of the camaraderie, you know, I've kept it going since 2005. There was another league when we started at Sports, CBS Sportsline, when it was Sportsline USA, we had in-house baseball and football leagues.
Right.
And we said, we're going to keep this league for as long as we're employed and not employed, that the original guys from our company are always going to be together, right? And by a certain point, more than half the original guys had dropped out of the league. Oh. I dropped out.
I'm going to tell you a story in a moment, but I want to go to Brian from New Jersey. He is on the line at 844-843-6879. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, guys. I got a question.
B, what up?
What's up, Tom? What's up, Tom? Sky?
How you
Happy
doing?
Happy baseball, everyone. I got a question. What exactly is an expert league these days?
It's a great question, actually. I think it's a fantastic question. What constitutes an expert league?
Okay, this is my opinion, and I'll be 100% honest with you. Say we take, for example, the labor draft last week.
Yeah.
That's an expert draft.
Okay.
Is that an expert league? I don't know. Those leagues are, in my opinion, those leagues are drafts. It's an expert draft. You get in a whole bunch of experts, and then you have a draft.
Right.
When the league starts playing out, you know why Ronas keep winning the damn league? A lot of times, Ronas is the only one setting the lineup. You feel what I'm saying?
I don't see
that happening in Tout Wars. In the league that I'm in, everybody's extremely active.
I've never been in Tout Wars.
So this leads me actually to the point I wanted to make, in that when I joined Roto Experts, right, which was the first fantasy organization that I worked for. The first draft that we did, it wasn't a mock draft, it was a draft. We posted the exclusive edge packet, Scotty.
I remember that. I was thinking about that the other night.
This is like four years ago. It doesn't matter. And we do this league, and I'm updating my team, and all of a sudden, no one's updating their teams anymore. No one's doing shit anymore. No one's doing a single thing. I'm like, why am I being competitive in this league if no one cares?
That's why.
And that bothered the crap out of me.
That's why I stopped having in-house leagues, and we just have the mocks.
Right. So, I think it's
because
if it's
not going to be authentic, I don't want to do it.
And so to Brian's question, what is the expert league?
I think it's a fair. I think it's a fair point.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question too. I think Scott's right too. Out of all the expert leagues, and I believe me, I've played in and I've done both. There's leagues where I've put in rosters, and when I was playing a whole bunch of leagues, I didn't give a shit about it. Everybody had an expert league. Like, there was a million of them. So
right.
There was nothing that was there. So, and you would have the draft sometimes so early you wouldn't participate. The one that I always played in, Sirius XM host, like, you work with those guys, similar like we're talking with the Greenwich Street Tavern every day.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to win it. I think I won like four different leagues when I was at Sirius XM, and those were always good, and they were free leagues, and I don't get excited about winning, but I did have some excitement winning those leagues because I just wanted to beat those guys. Like Dr. Roto, a guy I worked every year. He was right there with me in the standings, and I wanted to beat him. And then one year he ran me down. Like I had a big lead in September. He ran me down, and I was like pissed off about it. I'm like, what am I pissed off about? This is a free league.
Sure.
I look at the NFBC. It's the National Fantasy Baseball Championship. You got guys in there that won hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you can get in that league and you can succeed at those leagues and play every season, that separates you from most of the people's playing. I think that right there, to me, is actually a step up above the expert leagues that we see. We see guys putting their own money in these tournaments. And whether it's $150 or $10,000, it doesn't matter. But if you succeed at that level, I believe that's one of the things. I mean, hell, I talk about it every year. You know, I'm a single dad. I got three kids. I'll pay $1,300 to get in the league. You know why? Because it's my job. And I feel like I'm better than it. I spend more time doing this than anybody else. So I should succeed. So that's why I'm willing to do it. And I want the competition. I want to take down the best people. I get on these shows, and I talk out of my ass half the time, and I call people out. I better be good at what I do. And I use that to stay competitive.
You got
to
back it up.
Let me continue this here. The question Tony just brought up, and I think it's a fantastic point. If you are playing in high stakes leagues, does that make you more of an expert than playing in a free host league? Does that make you more of an expert? If you're playing in the high stakes league where you, as Tony just said, putting your money where your mouth is, putting $1,300 in a league for a team. And we know people that will put thousands upon hundreds of thousands of dollars in leagues. Does that make you more of an expert than you're playing in free leagues? We discussed that on the other side of the break here on the Road to Experts in the Morning. We asked during the break, or before the break, I should say, if spending, if you are a high-stakes player, if spending more money makes you an more of an expert than someone that doesn't. And I know, Scott, you probably feel very strongly about this because you feel, listen, I can't spend beyond my means. I only make X, so I can only spend Y.
Yeah.
And why does that make me any less of an expert? So how do you feel about that topic?
I feel about that topic. It's a conversation that's come up a lot over the years. What's the difference between a fantasy expert and an expert player? And I think they're both valid, and they both have modicums of success. I'll never forget, like, one of the first time, like, a Mets employee, like, high-stakes player, won a lot of money.
Right.
I'm hanging out with him and David Wright, and he says...
he had to make sure he couldn't mention
so
David
he
Wright
says,
there.
He says, probably. What's the difference between me and him, he says.
Right.
He says, you know, I win a lot of money. David Wright jokes, but he gets paid for it, right?
Right.
But, he gets paid for it, too. I think there's a difference between the expert player and the fantasy expert. The expert, and we can expand on this with the rest of the crew, the expert player is really good, like a Glenn Lowy, like managing his own teams and winning all that money.
Right.
The fantasy expert is successful, too, but I don't sit here and joke around and think I'm good as a Glenn Lowy. It's just, I've had this experience communicating at this level while also being successful to a degree. So I think there's a player and there's a fantasy expert. And then you get wonderful people like Chris Vaccaro, though, who could seemingly do both.
But
and
Scott,
you
if
really
I
got to listen to guys like that.
But if I was I hate to say this, but given the point you brought up, so if I am an amateur player, right, and I'm looking for advice because I'm trying to win my league, right? And you just told me you're the expert analyst. Glenn Lowy's the expert player. That's what you said.
Right. Yeah.
Why wouldn't I listen to Glenn Lowy over you?
Well, maybe Glenn Lowy's not interested in getting on the air. Maybe that's not his thing. Etc. You take somebody like I'll give an example. Hold on 1 second. I'll give an example. Corey Parson. Corey wins leagues. He wins chips, and he knows how to get on here and communicate.
I think Glenn Lowy is concerned with running his team.
Right. Exactly.
We have to run everybody's team.
Exactly.
That's
people come to us for advice, and not every expert player wants to do that. You get high stakes players and daily players who don't want people to know their identities.
Right. Yep. There you go. Right there.
You also have expert players playing these high stakes leagues that don't give out real information.
Yeah. Or they're just doing it for themselves. Or they don't know how to present the information. We have to present the information. Yeah, I think that the high stake player is the better player. I'm looking at football draft boards right now. You know what I'm saying? You put more time into it. It becomes a profession. You feel what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, you got dudes that do this for a living. You know what I mean? Like, when Jake get up here on Target and he start talking about this, that, and the third, and Benny say, play me in $1,000 head-to-head.
Right.
What? Jake says, just because you have more money doesn't mean that you're a better player.
And well, here's the thing.
In this case, it kind of does. You feel what I'm saying?
It's framed differently, Corey. It's like you sit here, okay, or Greg sits here. You make your living because you're good at communicating this. You've also won, etc. And you draw a salary for it. These guys get paid for it in a different way.
Exactly.
That's true.
Framing of it. And they're all valid.
But see, when Benny says that, Benny like he does it professionally. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you can't really go back and forth. And then if you do, like Jake does, and he says, play me $1,000 head to head.
But the other side of that is, yes, Benny does do this professionally, but if Benny loses the $1,000 head to head, he can go make it up tomorrow night in basketball.
Exactly.
Right? Jake loses that $1,000. I mean, that's a
but
massive
you know what, though,
that's
but
a
it,
but in a season long league, though, it's different. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
We all got the same opportunity for that 12 or 13 weeks.
It's like when Corey sits here and, like, forget the Benny $1,000 thing. Corey will say, here, Scott, I'm going to kick your ass. Play me in a head-to-head tonight.
Right.
And it's for free, but we still do it for the bragging rights.
Yeah.
Tony, so many people, and I think not just the people that we read or listen to or watch. I think, I'll say my friends, for instance, right? We play in a league, and we feel it's the best. I think most people that play in a competitive league that have been in it for decades at a time feel that, wow, who's better than us, right? Like, no, nobody. And do you feel like every league that people are in, a competitive league, the people are in here, they're all like, we could be any expert. We're experts. Do you feel, Tone, that anybody believes that they're an expert?
Oh, yeah. I just comes on Twitter with a guy that's actually in the industry, Jerry Colvin, right?
Right.
Jerry Colvin writes, the Brian League is one of the toughest leagues. It eats experts alive. And I wrote, how would you know? Because, you know, Jerry, he's in the industry, but he's never invited to any big leagues, and he's never won any. And so I ask him the question because everybody likes to talk on social media. And he says, what did you eat? A bowl of I'm going to be a dick today flakes? No, I'm calling you out because you make a statement and you can't back it up, which, Greg, to your point, everyone believes that. But that's, it's not true. Like, right. It's just not that true that every league is that. I play in leagues that we pay a lot of money to, right?
Sure.
And I've seen the same thing that we talked about where we've had guys that, you know what, they have more money than us. They're $1,300. Is basically, you know, our $3, right? That $1,300 to them is right. Like going to Starbucks. And they go to the draft, and they have fun, and they have the competition, and then they don't fill out their lineups half the time. And you're like, what so the true. Hell is going on here? So it doesn't mean just because you play in a money league that it is a better league.
But
in most cases, I think it is, but there are exceptions to every rule. And I think that has to go into
it. You can be a good player, but we do this professionally.
Yeah, you look at Cha-Cha, he'll come on the air and say, look, I don't play in those high type of money leagues, but I'll put my lineups up against anybody's.
Yeah.
The
Cha-Cha's nut, though, but, you know.
But besides the point, he's a good fantasy player is what I'm saying.
So I have friends. Like I have a friend that participates with his other friend, not my group of friends, $1,000 league.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money. It's undeniably, I would say, a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a shitload of money.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's $1,000 league.
Excuse me.
And he feels, number one, that the league, our league, which is for less money that he's been doing forever, like, to him it's less important. It's less money on the line. I get that. I also feel that he has this aura of, like, I play in this league. I'm a better player. I know more. I'm more of an expert than you. I could bet in an expert league and win. Because, you know,
he's in the league for more money.
Right.
Well, I play in one league that there's no money involved and it's highly competitive. I know other people that play in leagues for $5,000 a head, and 80% of the league is like mainstream or below.
So send me an invite. Send me an invite. Let me clean that one up.
You
gotta
have $5,000 to get in.
We'll put it together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you have to be part of
certain. We have investors.
Yeah, we got. Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about. I'm honestly talking about one of the Major League Baseball clubhouse leagues. You know, they put $5,000 on the line.
Right. We got you, Scott. You can get us in.
That's true. But they put the $5,000 on the line, like certain teams. And these guys don't pretend to be experts or anything like that.
Sure.
They have the means.
Yeah, but see, that's their clubhouse league. They're not going to let me in their clubhouse league.
But you know what? Hold on. You take random player. We'll just use Brett Gardner. I don't want to use Brett Gardner because you know him. Let's use Jacoby Ellsbury, right?
Yeah.
Jacoby Ellsbury, the Yankees have a $5,000 league, right? If Jacoby Ellsbury wins this league, you don't think Jacoby Ellsbury is going to be like, I'm an expert. I just won $60,000 for playing in a fantasy baseball league. I'm an expert.
I've seen this, and I've never seen a single player that said that. They just talk crap to their teammates.
Yeah, that's it. But you got to. Not a lot of money to them. You feel what I'm saying?
No.
That's like us paying $50 to get in the league. Right. So,
but again, it's the context of it, though. Just because you have the means to play for a lot of money doesn't mean. I've had people all the time throughout my career, like, playing these big money leagues, and they say, I want to hire you to help me with my league, or, you know, have you in on it. Yeah, I give you a cut.
Give them my card, Scott, if they want to win. Send them my way,
Greg,
Scott.
How do you
if
feel?
If they won't win.
Yep.
I don't think I need to.
See, Greg, yes. You've been around now for a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And you've seen us, you hang around with us, and
yep.
You see the guys
right.
there, and then you hang around with the guys like Vaccaro
yeah.
and Lowy. Like, how do you feel like the players are as opposed to the league you're playing with your buddies?
What do you mean by that, Quay? Like skill wise?
Like, how do you feel? Yeah, skill wise. I mean, you get to know these people, and
right.
you know certain people. They eat, sleep, and drink
they
this
do.
Stuff.
Right.
And then other guys, like, to me, like, when people say, you know, what makes you an expert, I can't even explain it, because if you ask that question to me, it's like not a comparative. Like, we talk about all the things that we go out and we get up at 3 a.m. we start looking at this thing. If you're doing what I'm doing and you're not getting paid for doing it, you got something wrong with you.
Right. To me.
Exactly. To Tony's point, real quick.
He asked me a question. He literally asked me a question.
Sorry. Go ahead.
To answer said question, I think this is very loud noise Rocket Riley's right now.
I was wondering where that was coming from. It's looking around my house.
If we're not here in a couple of minutes, Tony, just take over, man.
Like the floor shaking a little bit, too.
It is. It's very scary.
Yeah.
It's getting louder.
Don't be scared, Greg.
It's getting louder. I'm gonna hide behind you, man.
I got you.
He's hiding behind
I'm
Corey.
I'm currently
right
situated
now.
Behind Corey hiding. It's literally getting louder, though.
It is.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we talk about guys that eat, breathe, and sleep this stuff, and it's true because Tony, you and yourself, I've seen it with you. I've seen it with Matt Bodega. I've seen it with Vaccaro and Loey. The amount that you can just give me without, like, I have a computer in front of me and I got to read these Fangraph stuff and analyze it. What you can tell me, and Ronis, for instance, can tell me about these guys, your memory, it's not even just memories because you're studying, your ability to both comprehend and properly give out this information stuns me. Like, I can tell my friend, like, I out of the 12 buddies in this league, myself included, right? Like, two of us will use Fangraphs on a strong basis. I said it earlier this year when we were doing drafts and talking about this, right? Like, I never used Fangraph to the degree that I will be using this year. I never used Tony's, hey, let me get to this number, and I believe I'll have the best chance of winning if I can just reach these projections. These are something that they will never even think about, my friends. Right. And they will call themselves so-called experts. They will never think about this. And the same goes for football, for the guy that plays in the $1,000 league that believes he's an expert. I am sure the real expert, the real quote-unquote experts, the Vaccaros, the Sincatas, the Ronises, the Angles, the Parsons, will give this person stats that it's never even crossed his mind. Because we are so involved and into it.
Well, Corey looks at it a little differently. He don't buy into the advanced stats.
But in football, I'm telling you, Corey could tell you more about a player now.
Football's
than
a
this
different
person
game.
Tell
we're
you
talking
different.
About baseball, you know?
We're talking about fantasy sports.
I'm talking about fantasy sports in general. Well, I don't agree that Corey doesn't buy into advanced statistics in baseball. We're talking about every single day here.
He doesn't buy into stuff like FIP and stuff like that.
Corey, do you not buy into, like, Babbitt? Like, oh, this dude got unlucky last year?
All right. I'm glad you're mentioning this because we're going to get
a break because I think it's an interesting story also because we judge these players by Fangraphs every single day because we're trying to predict hard hit percentage, walk percentage, strikeout percentage, fly ball to home run ratio, and I'm buying into it. And you say Corey doesn't. We'll get Corey's take on it on the other side of the break here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We spent the last hour describing experts and what makes you an expert. And that's kind of led us in to the hardcore statistics of that. We sit and we go over statistics every single day about players. And we'll do it next hour. Right? By the week is linked next hour. We have a team of day to get to you next hour. We'll talk about these players and advanced statistics. And, you know, Scotty, you brought up a point that I was saying how in my league, like, you're not having the guy sit here on Fangraphs each and every day and looking at the angle we are. Like, most of my friends in my league will be like, all right, this guy hit 30 home runs last year. This guy hit 10 home runs. The guy at 30 is much better, like million times better than the guy with 10. And we can sit here, no, look at the Babbitt. Look at the fly ball to home run ratio. Blah, 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 blah. Corey, you said Corey doesn't necessarily consider that.
All right, you see, first, you have to understand a couple, and we're going to get into this topic right here on Old School Fantasy today.
Okay.
First and foremost, I love fantasy sports.
Right.
I play fantasy sports. I do the football part of it, you know, at a high level. But I am a radio presenter. I'm an entertainer.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So if I say advanced statistics are a waste of time, I'm really trying to draw a reaction from people. You feel what I mean?
Yep.
Now, when you want to talk to me personally about it, yes, I do think they are a waste of time. It's only one I can get involved with, and that's the batting average on balls in play.
That's it.
That's it. The rest of it, give me the 5x5 numbers.
So all the stuff that we're talking about, like the stuff we talk about daily, like your home run to fly ball ratio.
Makes no I, nothing. I don't you. Care about that.
Nothing for you.
No, absolutely nothing whatsoever. And I and at 10 a.m. Eastern time, in an hour from now, I'll make the argument of exactly why. It might be some hurt feelings in the room today too.
What do you say then, Corey? Corey, what do you say then to people that'll be like, how can you be an expert if you just throw this out there?
Because I will tell you.
I don't want to ruin your hour and
Yeah. How can you be an expert if you just throw this away? Right. Because when it comes to baseball, you already have the 5x5 numbers. The rest of the numbers, it all leads right back to the 5x5 numbers.
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
That's
the thing, though.
Corey, there
are certain things that I will pick out. It's like there's such a big library of statistics. I can't spend time on Sierra, but you know, home run to fly ball ratio is relevant.
Hit the ball in the damn air.
Look at Eric Hosmer's fly ball rate doubled last year.
So what? He hit the ball in the air more. Did he hit more home runs?
Yes.
That's what's important.
But you know what, though? What's important is that's not his career track, and it points to regression.
More on that old school fantasy coming up at 10 a.m. Eastern time. When we come back, it's a team of day. Next, Roto Experts.